35 points. 50 points. You can stop now, or you can keep on rolling. Keep on rolling. No way, yes. No way, Evan. You fool. No way.
I would do it too, Evan. I love this.
Welcome to Which Game First, where we boldly explore the hilariously huge world of board games. Did we find any hidden treasures you've been missing out on? Let's find out. First up this week, let's curate the finest collections in modern art. Next, alien races vie for galactic domination in Twilight Imperium. And lastly, let's go supernova with Cosmic Wimpout. I'm your host, Celeste DeAngelis. Now let's meet the rest of our brave and intrepid panel.
Hi, I'm Ed Povilaitis, a gamer and an alchemist. Is there a difference?
I'm Evan Bernstein. I play games with people, but I never play games with people.
I'm Joe Onfrey. I play games with people and play games with machines, but I never play games with crocodiles.
I'm Mike Grenier. I'm a game designer and definitely not a cannibal.
Oh, phew.
That's a relief, I'm sure.
That's, yeah.
Okay, our first game today is Modern Art. Designed by Rainer Niza, we played the new edition published by Kaman, which stands for Cool Mini or Not, in 2017. It was first published in 1992. Number of players is 3 to 5, ages 10 and up, and it takes about 45 minutes. Ed, you dug this game up and brought it to the table. Tell us about it.
Well, in Modern Art, you take the role of a museum curator, trying to buy and sell paintings for the best price. The players are dealt a hand from a deck of paintings featuring 5 different modern artists. Each round, players take turns auctioning a painting until 5 paintings from the same artist were collectively auctioned that round. Then everyone sells the painting they acquired. Paintings from those popular artists, the most auctioned, are the more valuable. Only the top 3 have value, so hopefully you showed wisely. Then a new round of auction begins with new values determined at the end of that round.
And Ed, why did you bring this game to the group?
It's an auction game, used in many different types of auctions, and I thought it would be interesting to discuss other styles of art.
And Mike, what do you think?
Oh, I like naming the collections as we played them, just coming up with weird names for them. It was fun and allowed us lots of room to roleplay.
And Evan, how about you?
Yes, being the curator for the Paris Art Gallery, it allowed me to use my outrageous French accent.
And Joe, what about you?
We loved playing the acquisition directors of prestigious museums from around the world, even though my London accent is atrocious enough to qualify as a grave breach under the Geneva Convention.
Agreed.
For sure. Ed, how about you?
Oh, it's all about the art of the auction, you know, convincing them that you're selling the next big thing.
Boy, and you sure did, man. You sold like nobody's business. Man, I loved this game. The opportunity to play a top art museum curator from New York City. I am in. It doesn't call for role-playing, but of course we put it in there. And naturally, I role-played as heavily as I could, where I could. And I leaned heavily on the haughty cosmopolitan socialite stereotype. Because, you know, when I opened Vanity Fair as a kid and looked at the society pages, I fell right into their clutches, wishing I was there too.
Yeah, and the light rules of the game gives you a lot of space to like do that kind of role playing. You don't have to think too much about the rules as you're just going for like your curator.
Yeah, that's right. You're just basically into it. You know, you're trying to figure out what collection you're going to have, how much it's going to be worth. It evoked the feel of being a curator to me, you know, to a layman who doesn't know any better.
Auction games are fun because they get all the players involved at the same time. And I think that's always a good mechanism for a game, is when everyone has an interest simultaneously at what's going on. You're not just waiting for your turn.
Yeah.
There's no downtime. That's great.
Yep. Yeah. You're always you always have an opportunity to think about what you're going to buy next or what you're going to sell next. What was interesting to me was that you had to really balance between buying and selling. Big shocker here. I tried an aggressive buying technique, and what I ended up with was a great collection that was worth a lot of money, but I had spent so much money buying it that in the end, I didn't make much off it. And you do need money to win.
Yeah. Strategy-wise, I think I know a lot of people bought their own auction too often.
Yeah. Why is that? Why do you think that's a problem?
Because, you know, that's the way you can get a lot of money. If, for example, I'm auctioning a painting for, you know, say $30, and you know, you think it might be worth 50, right? So, you know, so if the price starts getting up to, you know, say $40, why buy it yourself and make an extra, you know, $5 profit? We can just take $40 or $45 profit right now and let somebody else only make $5 profit.
Right, and it's a risk, too, when you do that. Like, you don't know what it's actually going to be worth by the end of the round.
Right, so I might as well take the $40 now rather than maybe $50 later.
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes it's worth the risk, though. The game's a good blend of the math and the psychology of it, too. You know,
right.
You have to decide how far you can make somebody else push the bid or how much you can make somebody else pay for something that in the end is going to end up costing them more than they get back for it.
Right. It was all as part of the art of the sell. You're like, hey, you know, the thing's going to be like $90 at the end of the game, right? Yeah. You want this.
Yeah. I was thinking of it more like a museum where you're really not worried about too much about how you're going to make the money, which at least that's what I would think of museums. This seems more like a gallery type of thought process, you know?
I suppose they're all about getting people in the door.
Yeah. Like, for me, I was thinking, a museum? I just want an awesome collection.
Right.
But, you know, if you're a gallery, you want the money as well as a great artist.
Yeah, you're more a dealer than a gallery manager in this game.
Yeah, I mean, than a museum curator, for sure. But yes, the claim is that you're a museum curator, in which case I would think the focus should be more on a collection. Although I think another version of this game as a gallery might work out really well too. Like, you could be different types of art dealers, even an auction house, and have different, slightly different goals.
You have to work the room and read the table all the time.
Yeah, you did something kind of cool, Celeste, where you there was one artist for some reason nobody was playing, and then you started throwing it into the mix a little bit, and all of a sudden it was like people were paying attention to it, and it created a buzz about the new artist. Even though on the board it wouldn't be worth much money, it was still kind of like you used that little bit of psychology to get people to want that painting a little more, and I thought that was cool.
Yeah, that artist became hot all of a sudden.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool.
Right.
Yeah.
I appreciate you attributing it to my strategy, but it probably was dictated by the cards in my hand, which is something you do have to deal
with. Yes, but I didn't know that.
Well, I think that's another part of the strategy.
Yeah.
And not all artists are the same. There's a different value assigned to each artist, and there is a pecking order, in a sense, as to which artist sort of gets counted up first, second, third, and fourth. And that has to play into your strategy, especially in the latter rounds of the game.
Yeah, right. It has to do with how many of each artist's paintings are featured in the entire deck.
Yeah, and it was great that they used real artists. That was fascinating.
Right.
And the rule book that came with it was full of art.
Right, it had a nice art book for them. There are five artists that were featured in the book.
In this version. Yep. And in 1992, it had a different version, a different group of artists.
Right, I think it's always five, but they're different artists.
Yeah, and that's another reason I think that this game would be great to publish. I mean, I know it's expensive to publish over and over, but if it developed a following, if they published every couple of years with new artists, I'd buy it again.
I suppose some art enthusiasts might buy it just to try and, you know, collect them all.
Right, right.
The older version has a bunch of different, like, older artists in there, too. Like, you know, and I think that this game could be cool if it just published artists of the time, and then it could continue to publish, you know, every decade or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe just an expansion of art cards.
Yeah,
or
a couple new
cards. Yeah, expand the game.
Yep, I really enjoyed the art. I'm not an art, certainly not an art person or a modern art aficionado. Yeah. Would you call all of these guys modern art style?
It certainly looked like modern art to me, although I didn't recognize any of the names. Did any of you guys recognize the artist?
No, I did not.
So what we're all saying is we don't really have a deep art background, but we did appreciate what we saw there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, pretty colors.
Bearded woman with monocle. And I remember that one.
Yes, I do.
The girl with glasses collection.
Yeah, there was.
It was. I think it was broads with glasses.
Oh, about the dudes with beard collection. I think that would be.
Yeah. Yes, I'm mixing up my collections.
The New York Art Gallery is proud to offer.
I'm digging this game.
What we can no longer call an up and coming artist, but a successful and in demand, Rafael Severa. This collection comes from his broads and glasses collection.
Broads and glasses.
And it's called...
And snakes and heads.
The broads and glasses collection.
You get a free box of chocolate.
The broads and glasses collection.
My only criticism of this game is that I had a hard time keeping my museum from falling down. You have this sort of, I can't describe it anywhere other than a Dungeon Master screen that you set up in front of you. Yeah.
A trifold screen.
And I'm sorry, I could not get the damn thing to stand up. So after a while, I just put it down. Like
that shoddy French workmanship.
I did like how the placards were, you know, they made a rudimentary effort to have each one take on the appearance of what the actual building looks like.
Black.
Yes.
That was cool. I liked that a lot. It definitely wasn't their strongest, best developed piece. The cards were definitely better conditioned.
It was a nice touch.
It was something you'd call, that's the perfect term for it. That's a nice touch, yeah.
Yeah, it helped me. It helped me get into the role-playing mood to look at my cool museum sitting in front of me. A picture of it made me feel like I was important. So I liked that.
You sure acted like you were important.
Well, I'm a New York art, curator. Of course I'm going to think I'm important.
And we were referring to ourselves and each other as the cities, too. What does Paris say?
No. We are going to have open auction. Shout out your bid. All player may bid in order and any number of time until I say going un, going de. Begin.
I don't want that trash.
I will accept
2,000.
We have 2,000.
Another cool variety, I think, is the different type of auctions in the game. So you had your standard auction, which everybody knows about, but then they mix it up every now and then. Sometimes you'll have a one-around auction or a hidden auction where you just put a blind bid against other people in there, or a fixed price saying it's, I'm selling it for this price, take it or leave it.
Yeah, and then there's the double auction where you put two of the same artist paintings up at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Those are always the big deals.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, you could go bust on that.
I did totally go bust. I was doing all right until the last round when I went super bust on one of those auctions.
Oh, you definitely were ahead, Mikey. I figured it out. If you didn't buy my two paintings that I sold off, you would have won.
Mm-hmm.
For 150,
Well, if those paintings had come in as one of the three top contenders, I would have probably won off of that. But nope.
Yeah, but
it did not
gambled
happen.
Gambled and lost.
I gambled and lost, exactly.
Ah, such is the nature of the art world.
I guess so.
It's true.
Very volatile.
It's actually, for such a simple game, it makes a really nice peek into the world of buying and selling art.
Yeah, it evokes a great feel for that. Okay, guys. It's time to decide whether or not to dig it up or bury it. Evan, what do you think?
I say dig it up. It looked good. It played well. It struck a nice balance of culture and fun.
And Joe, how about you?
I've played lots of auction games. None of them really struck me to where I was eager to play them again. And having different styles of auctions come up unexpectedly really made it for me. This is one to dig up.
Mike, how about you?
Oh, it's a rare and beautiful work of art when a game can keep everybody at the table fully engaged. So I definitely have to say dig it up.
Ed?
I'll dig it up. It's easy to learn. Everybody's involved. And then you're getting some exposure to art.
And I say dig it up for sure. Start a collection of your own. And I'd love to see more modern art games, please. More pretty pictures. Ed, where can you find this game?
Oh, this game is available at most hobby game stores and you can get it online. It retails for about $30.
Okay, if any of you have played modern art or have thoughts about it, please share them with us on Facebook at Which Game First or tweet us at Which Game First. We would love to hear from you. Up next is Twilight Imperium. This game was designed by Christian T. Peterson. We played the fourth edition, published by Fantasy Flight Games in 2017. Number of players 3 to 6, ages 14 and up, and the gameplay time 4 to 8 hours. Ed, you brought this game to us. Tell us about it.
Yes,
where'd you
find
it?
Well, honestly, I first played this game years and years ago. It first came out in the 1990s. I played the second edition at first, which came out around 2000. And then when I found out they just published the fourth edition at Gen Con, I had to pick it up.
Yeah, you had to pick it up. Okay.
Yes.
And tell us how it's played.
In Twilight Imperium, your interstellar empire is vying for galactic domination through military might, political maneuvering, technological prowess, and economic bargaining. A round begins with players selecting one of 8 strategy cards that determine initiative and provides a unique strategic action. Then players take turns performing actions, such as moving fleets, claiming new planets, and engaging in warfare and trade with other empires. After everyone passes, players may claim objectives to earn victory points. At the end of a round, players gather in a grand council to vote on new laws and agendas that may shake up the galaxy. The game ends when an empire reaches 10 victory points, claiming the imperial throne.
And Ed, why did you bring this game to us?
It's an epic game of galactic conquest that offers a bit of everything.
It sure is epic. It is definitely epic. Mike, what about you? How did you like it?
I love this game. The updated version that they made has some great innovations on the classic.
Evan, how about you?
Axis and Allies in Space. All hail Mechatol Rex. That's the name of one of the planets. But
Mechatol Rex.
Mechatol
it's
Rex.
It's the planet, yes.
Mechatol Rex. Ed, how about you?
An epic 4X style game? Not yet. Hell yes. Pac Magnifica Bellum Gloriosa.
What?
it's a line that's in the book all over the place.
And Ed, what is a 4X style game?
Well, 4X is a genre of strategy games where you basically explore, expand, exploit, and exterminate.
Oh, cool. Ooh. So they're all, it's really a 4Es.
Sounds like colonialism.
Pax Magnifica Bellum Gloriosum.
Yeah.
Nice embellishment.
Which means magnificent peace, glorious war. I think that's accurate. Joe, how about you? What did you think of the game?
I'm a little biased because I was eliminated early.
Sorry about that.
In retrospect, I must admit I made a grave error in play, but but the game is a lot more complicated than it needs to be.
And I agree there are complications, but actually I thought for a military building game in outer space, it had pretty easy to understand rules. Probably a few too many of them, but pretty easy to understand. So I enjoyed it. I was ready. It had me powering my surface cannons, ready to blast everybody else out of the sky.
And that you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rules were great, but whoa, the color text, not so much.
All right. Yeah, is that where we're going to start with that?
They had a whole separate book, a lore book.
One might say way too much
and
color
all of
text,
it pretty much superfluous.
Yes, yeah,
totally color superfluous.
Text, but I had a fun laugh reading it.
It's definitely worth a laugh.
Seriously, Ed, why? What were you entertained by in that?
I mean, the silliness. It adds a lot of flavor. Each of the different races had their own silly tagline.
Oh, yeah. It had a lot of flavor. In fact, it was all flavor. No actual protein. No nutrition at all.
Well, that's what the rule for. I mean, heck, you don't need more protein after reading the rule book.
Yeah. It was almost like it was a bunch of rules designers who had to draw straws, and the one that got the short end had to write the color text.
They just watch a lot of the Sci-Fi Channel, and they just, you know, modeled the writing after the writing on that channel.
There's probably an improvement, to be honest.
It's a bunch of generic sort of phrases that could fit almost in any context that you wish to place it in, like, the wars of drum were beating and over the horizon it approached. That kind of stuff. Like, okay, like what? What does that have to do with
like
anything?
An epic space war generator.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't a suck you in type of reading experience.
And look, I get if the rules are 4 pages long, okay, you need some fill and stuff. The rules are about 39 or 58 pages long. And you didn't need 84 pages of filled and colored text.
Oh, come on, Evan. There was only 14 pages of actual rules. Yes, I found it.
And you know you're working with lightweights. You know that.
I like the rule book being long.
I don't mind it being long. What I'm saying is you don't need all this other stuff to sort of take your attention away from trying to learn the rules of the game.
I like cheesy stuff like that, though.
I love context. And it would be one thing if the color text provided you a real feel for the world you were getting into. But it wasn't. It was a bunch of fancy words.
Oh, come on. I mean, here's one quote right here.
Oh, boy.
There is no price too great for the Hakan. No silk too fine. No war too long. My people will persevere. Does that not bring you in?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
That's so deep.
Valuable information.
Well, I didn't go. I think I get too carried away now.
I mean, what political leader doesn't make speech like that?
Yes, but this is supposed to be an escape from reality.
I know things suck now, but it's not because of my leadership. It's because we're on the right track.
Yay us.
We will win the thing that we're fighting in.
I think we can actually get to the game now.
Yeah, right. All right.
Well, I'll tell you something. Before we get to the game, if you wanted context, I strongly suggest strategy guides that are all over the internet. I mean, the internet is littered with strategy guides.
Sure,
for this
game. Just my moment to pick one for the right edition.
Yeah.
Yes, right, exactly. That's a good point. So this edition, Ed was kind enough to bring us the newest, freshest edition, which of course doesn't have much in the way of strategy guides out yet. Perhaps by the time this podcast comes out, it'll have more. So I decided, all right, I'm generally recognized as a lightweight when it comes to 40-page rule books. However, I was determined to know this game inside and out before we played it. So I dug into strategy guides, started totally combing through them. I did spend actual hours reading strategy guides.
Wow.
And then, in my pride, gloated to Ed about it. And Ed came back with a very humbling question. Are you reading strategy guides for the right version of this game? So I realized then that I was reading a strategy guide for version, what, three?
Yeah, three. For three.
Yeah. So not all of the what I read was of use to me. But I will admit, actually, even though I was very deflated when I realized that, a lot of it helped a lot. And it did actually give me a great feel for the game.
Well, a lot of the concepts are the same between the third and fourth edition. The differences are more of a streamlining rather than a drastic overhaul of the game.
Yeah, I mean, there's different parts of the game too. Like the something I really liked that they added was the way they do diplomacy and have the contracts. That wasn't in the older version, right, Ed?
No, the promissory notes that they call them, they add a lot of new options for diplomacy, and I like that.
Mm-hmm. So promissory notes are these bargaining cards you can trade with other nations.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of stuff that would be, you don't really want to give it away. Like, for instance, Celeste was playing a warlike race, and one of her contracts that she could give out was a ceasefire, which would just, the person could play it and say, no, you can't attack this region this turn. So it's kind of like a promise that's binding for the future.
Promissory notes are to your detriment. You should need to be careful when giving them away or trading them away with other players. Make sure you get something really good in return for it.
Right, exactly.
And a nice twist is that you can actually resell them to other players, like the one Celeste gave to Joe.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Ended up in Mikey's hand eventually later somehow.
Yeah.
After a solemn promise from Joe's nation that it would not be traded.
Yeah. So listen, I was playing a very weak race, like just all about technology and stuff. And I somehow evoked the ire of the worst, most vicious,
puny, peace-loving race.
Yeah, those people. The horrible insect race that's the most brutal combat race in the game.
Oh, man, they are.
And luckily, I got my hands on the ceasefire, which probably saved me for a full extra turn that had been traded to Joe.
I did like that the different races had different strengths that were very well balanced. I mean, as poor as the color text is, that's how good the rules are. The rules are very good for this game. Although, do see what Joe is saying, a little too much in the way of rules. I could have done without the whole, I don't think we made much use of the diplomatic Senate at the end. And I mean, it just,
a couple times it came into gameplay. Yeah.
That's my opinion of it, a little different.
All I could do is envision like the Senate from the Phantom Menace. And yeah, I was just like, okay, this is useless.
What the diplomacy round allows you to do is set up some new laws and rules basically of the game as it goes along. For example, I invoked a law by which players had to discard basically half of the cards, action cards and things that they could play in their hands. And boom, that's it for the rest of the game. That's a law. Everybody lost access to half of their cards. And that, I think, had an impact.
Oh, yeah. I mean, our hand size was reduced from 7 down to 4. And I played a different game recently where a law came out in effect that reduced the fleet size down to a maximum of 4. You can't have a fleet size bigger than 4.
The feeling that your first tactical mistake could be your last one, you know, can really helps immerse you in the experience, but it can also slow play down quite a bit.
I can't speak to the strategy of the other races, but the one I played, the Sardauk Nor, I thought they were excellently balanced. I thought you could do, I mean, I was too aggressive with them because when I see that I'm good at guns, I want to shoot things. So it gives me a +2 when I'm rolling.
Yeah, +2 to all your chips in that hex.
Yeah, so. Only in that hex.
What is wrong with you? That is one of the sickest
things. And you've been holding back?
I know. I know.
Every roll? And you haven't done anything?
I mean,
fine, guys, fine. I want to see this awesome thing in action.
20% more than
Listen.
To hit. Yeah, that race is basically a hammer looking for nails, though. They have a very straightforward strategy.
You definitely just better build up as fat an army as you can and then just, you know, try to find victory points anywhere you can get them. And usually you're going to get the victory points that are the ones where it says gain a victory point if you, like, destroy this person's capital ship. But I think playing slightly less aggressively than I did and building up for maybe one or two more turns, you could probably hold your own with everybody else. I thought it was very well balanced.
No, it did pretty good. I think if you just held on to Mechtal for an extra turn or two, you're running right there.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, third edition strategy guides who all told me to quit Mechtal Rex, get in, get points, get out.
Yeah. Well, you didn't stop to get the points, though. You went there and you left immediately.
Well, no, I took the point. I took the one point.
Oh, the one point that's sitting there, yeah.
You may have been a little bit too single-minded about getting, like, one point.
No, I definitely was.
Not noticing other opportunities for points. But.
And I was really, really charmed by the extra sexy dreadnought that I got to get.
Oh, the exploding dreadnought that blows everything up?
Yeah, super special.
The ectotyreme? Yeah, those were pretty powerful.
Yeah, they were awesome.
Yeah, that thing was brutal.
Yeah.
Ouch.
So that is definitely a hammer looking for a nail.
Yep.
Yeah, I like all the improvements they made in the fourth edition. I mean, the technologies are done in a more easy way to advance. Instead of having a static tree, you just, you know, have prerequisites to build the next thing. So you have more options there.
I like the tech. Even for a race that was extremely low tech, I believe my race started with no tech. It was really interesting. The tech was cool.
Yeah, and I think the components were well done, too. The plastic pieces were even nicer.
Oh, yeah.
Are better detailed than the ones I had in the third edition. And there are 17 different factions included in the base set. So each one is different.
I know. We only scratched the surface, really.
And it's very interesting how they balance. I remember looking at a bunch of the factions that we didn't play and thinking, wow, it looks like that would be an interesting one to play next time.
Yeah, it could take you in a completely different direction, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm, In fact, I'd love to play the ones I played again to tweak my strategy.
You were hell-bent on destroying my race, and I was so peaceful.
Right. Well, it was a strategy at the time. I stand by that strategy. I still stand by it. That was not where I went wrong. What's the point of clearing Evan? That doesn't help me. All it does is weaken me for the two strongest players. My only option is either go after Ed, who's now too strong to go after, or go after Mike.
Yeah, it's
who she thinks is weak enough to go after.
Who I hope is weak enough to go after. I can't. I'm not sure. It wasn't like when Joe decided with his two planets to attack Ed's 45 planet army. It wasn't that kind of tactical error.
Well, it made things easy for me. I was wondering who to pick on. It's like, okay.
Yeah, you never want to be the first one to poke Ed.
Yeah.
He's such a nice guy, but once you poke him.
Yeah, Ed is always prepared.
As well, you already poked me. Now I might as well eliminate you off the map. It's only fair, right?
Okay, so now it's time to decide, do we dig up or bury Twilight Imperium? Joe, what do you think?
Now, when I play it, I feel like I'm playing one of those very long, very difficult first-person shooters that's sort of like one mistake and you're dead. But I do enjoy those, so I'll probably play this game again.
Mike, how about you?
Oh, man, I've always liked this game, and this version is even better than its predecessor, so I say dig it up.
Evan?
Dig it up. The superfluous write-ups notwithstanding. I liked it for all the same reasons I enjoyed games in my past, like Axis and Allies, so much.
Ed, how about you?
I'll definitely dig it up. This is the epic galactic conquest game. Pact Magnifica Bellum Gloriosum.
And I'm definitely going to say dig it up. I enjoyed it a lot. I had a lot of fun. And for a ridiculously long game, that is really saying something for me. Ed, where can you find this game?
The new edition is available at most hobby game stores and online. It retails for about $150.
Whoa, dollars?
Yes,
it's a big game.
you might be able to find it on sale at other places for a little bit cheaper, but that's the MSRP.
Wow.
Ah, right.
So you can probably pick up a third edition with the expansion for only $100.
Interesting. Okay. So if any of you have played Twilight Imperium or have a comment about it, we definitely want to hear from you. Our Facebook page is Which Game First, or tweet us at Which Game First. Up next is Cosmic Wimpow. There's no designer attribution on the game itself, but the word around the internet is that it was designed by someone named W.W. Swilling and the charmingly named Boston Logical Society. Wow. Though neither of them has a presence personally on the internet. And given the humorous nature of this game, that can all be a joke. I have no idea. The producer of this game is Kaplow Games. Number Kaplow. Is 2 to 7, ages 7 and up, runs about 20 minutes. I brought this game to the table, and I first found it when I was working at my brother Perry's comic book and gaming store in the early 90s. This is a fast-paced dice-rolling game where the goal is to gain enough points to win, and that's it. The dice have symbols on them and numbers, and you try to match 3 and 5 of a kind on the dice. The game has an outer space theme that shows in the names of the rules of all things, and each rule has a very unique name. Panel, if I may, presented here are the names of the rules of Cosmic Wimpout.
Okay.
Going Supernova.
Ba-boom.
The Flaming Sun.
Ooh.
The Futless Rule. Totally made up word, I checked. Getting a Flash. The Train Wreck, because, you know, space trains.
Yes, yes.
The Guiding Light Rule.
Ooh, a soap opera.
And ladies and gentlemen, the... You may not want to, but you must rule. And believe me, a player may indeed not want to, but alas, they must.
Yay! You may not want to, but you must. 40. Continue rolling.
Good luck, Ed.
But you can stop if you get something.
Get numbered. Just
I
get
love
a number.
This dice.
I know. 40.
Oh, whip out! Oh, no! You
I'm
deserve
not on the board
it.
Either, Ed. I'm not on the board either, Ed.
You That's deserve called. It for not paying attention.
That's called karma.
I've been listening.
And guys, the rules further suggest that you practice cosmic cube control to energize your cubes for better gameplay.
Yeah. Hey, couldn't hurt.
It's not specific on how, so I assume it's like the discipline of yoga, different for everybody.
Like the force.
Or fairy dust.
I have never fallen in love with a game as hard and fast as I did for this one. When I first suggested that we start this podcast to share our game finds, this is the game I was thinking about.
Oh, wow.
Mike, what did you think of the game?
If you can take a tube of dice that can keep 5 of us entertained, that's quite an accomplishment.
Evan, how about you?
It combines aspects of some of the classic dice games such as Yahtzee, Craps, Farkle, and Hogtide.
Come on.
Classic.
Hogtide. Classic. Ed?
Oh, it's a super fast, light, press your luck, even if you don't want to game.
Yes, you may not want to, but you must. Joe, how about you?
Most dice games are fast, and this one leaves the rest in the dust.
So here it is. I'm going to just tell you. Mm-hmm. One of my true states of joy is frenetic glee. Nothing has ever gotten me to that state faster than yelling out the rules of Cosmic Wimpout as they come up while playing through a round.
You get this sort of base emotion coming forward, right?
Oh, it is a visceral love, pure and simple.
A nice frothing of raw emotion. I like it.
There's actually several different versions of this game, and they're all the same dice, but some come with a soft game pad board. If you look online, some come in a box. They've printed this game, it looks like, a bunch of times in different styles. The very first pack of dice I got, the very first time I bought this, it came in a old-fashioned clear dice cube, and anybody who is a role player will recognize the clear plastic square that your set of D20 dice come in.
I'm looking at one right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I have one right on my shelf here.
Actually, when we first started this podcast, Evan gave us all the gift of a cube of role-playing dice.
I did. A little ceremonial good luck to everyone.
They're nice.
Yeah, I have the white ones. I use them for my priestly characters. So, It's interesting. I remember the dice cube. That was a nice one because you could put it in your pocket. I do like the tube that you'll usually get it in now because you can just stick it in your pocket and go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really portable.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I love a game that gives players the chance to have an epic turn. Just like the most ridiculously epic turn, like the one Ed had.
He was in last place, right.
I mean, I was definitely last place. I mean, there's no hope for me at all. And then Joe got the points he needed to win the game. So this was, all right, last lick, just roll the dice and be done with it. And it turned out to be the epic turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the most epic of turns. It was awesome.
It was. And that's the beauty of Cosmic Wimp Out. You can go from nothing to everything. Master of the universe in one single play. So that's why yelling out the rules is actually something that really helps gameplay, because you have to know what rules apply to each time you roll the dice. And if you can familiarize yourself with the rules and you get to be the fun person who gets to yell them all out because you know them all. And so you look at the dice and you know what rules need to apply.
30, 30, keep rolling, baby. Odds are still in your favor because that black die gets
10 or 5, 10 or 5. There 40, it is.
40, you can stop. You can stop.
To get on a board, I'll stop.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Good man.
It is really fun. And so it was fun to watch Ed keep rolling those dice, and I got to tell him what he needed to roll over and over and what mm-hmm. had to be done for each one. And the you may not want to, but you must rule is so yeah. much fun. It is when you score on all five dice eventually, whether through one roll or many, and then you may not want to roll anymore because you've got a great amount of points. But once you've scored on all five, you must.
Yeah, because if you wimp out, if you like get nothing on one of your rolls, then your turn is over and you don't get any of the points that you accumulated so far.
Right.
Yeah, hence the term wimp out.
When he yelled out the first time I rolled that roll, I was a little confused. It's like, oh, it's a train wreck. And I was like, aww.
That sounds bad.
Yeah.
How is a train wreck a good thing? And then he said, wow, that was like 300 points. I'm like, what?
300 points, not for you.
Not for, yeah, exactly. May not want to, but you must is a hugely long name for a rule, but it's one of the best rules in a Press Your Luck game that I've seen. Usually, Press Your Luck, you get to stop when you want to, and you know, it's all about, do I want to go further? But this one here is like, no, you have to go a little further now that you've pushed it to this point. So that's cool. I haven't actually seen that in another Press Your Luck game that I played yet.
Yeah, that's actually the one thing I would say is a negative, Leslie. But for me,
how dare you?
The Press Your Luck style of game is about, oh, when do I say that's enough or I'd keep pushing it? But because of the you must rule often in there, it takes a few of your choices away. You're just kind of along the ride sometimes.
It does, Ed, but only once you've pressed your luck to a certain point. Right. So you do have opportunities elsewhere to stop rolling. But if you're going all the way to scoring on five dice, yeah, then you have to keep going.
Yeah. I mean, it's purely a luck game. But in the case of this game, I mean, it's welcome because the whole game is just ridiculously, outrageously lucky. So it doesn't bother me like some of the games with a little too much luck do.
Because of that, you must rule, it actually builds some suspense because you're hoping to avoid a wimp out so you can keep that epic score.
Right,
yep. A wimp out or a train wreck, either one.
Uh-huh.
I think the delightful whimsy of the rules is the thing that makes this luck game very fun to play.
Yeah.
Laughs have to abound if it's a luck game.
Right. Yeah, it has to have the opportunity for madness, like high levels of luck. It took me forever to get on the board, which kind of bummed me out. Like, so you have to roll a certain amount of points, I think 35 points, before you can actually start accumulating points and choosing to stop.
That's a tough roll.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
I guess you weren't good at rolling dice.
I'm never good at rolling dice, as you will learn. No. I'm terrible.
Mikey in the dice games.
Ed, you really didn't have to poke that bear. You know how Mike feels about dice.
Thanks, man. Thanks. It hurts.
You did it on purpose.
He did, of course. Yeah. It's all right. Ed's one of Ed's favorite hobbies is just to poke me. He gets such glee. You should see the look on his face.
You know what it is, though? You have to admire his strategy.
Oh, it's a good throw me off balance. I'm a pretty darn good strategist, so Ed knows that he needs to just get me a little off balance.
And it's in his name. I mean, Ed Pokolitis.
Pokolitis, that's true.
Okay, it's time to decide whether or not to dig up or bury Cosmic Wimp Out. Ev, what do you think?
I say dig it up. I'm hard-pressed to find a dice game that I don't think is fun. And hey, all dice games are fun in my book.
Ed, how about you?
It's not my favorite type of game, but its absurdity and its brevity are just enough for me to dig it.
Mike, you?
It's fast. It's fun. It's easy to learn. I would definitely dig it up.
Yeah. Okay. And how about you, Joe?
Dig this up. If you're not familiar with the rules of the game, you will be. Very fast.
All right, everybody. You know you got to get on your space train and get out there and chisel this game out of the hunk of space ice that you and your desperate, hardened interstellar crew are harvesting for precious water, and use it to stave off the terrors of the endless blackness just outside your hatch.
And that's not hyperbole, right, Celeste?
No, not at all. Not at all. We played it on my space train.
Celeste, when we're playing that game with you, that's the only way to play that game is on your space train.
Any and all of our fans, if you ever see me out there, I will play Cosmic Wimp Out with you anytime. And that
is
a promise.
Not joking. Not joking at all.
All right. You can get this game online between $12 and $25, I saw all the different versions. So check it out. Get a copy now. And if you've ever played Cosmic Wimp Out, boy, do we want to hear from you. And you can reach us at Facebook, Which Game First, or tweet us at Which Game First. We would love to hear from you. And that brings us to the end of our show. We look forward to hearing about all the game exploring you've done. You can support this podcast at patreon.com/whichgamefirst. Our supporters get an additional, exclusive, full episode every other week. Follow us on your favorite social media site. We are at Which Game First on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And on iTunes, leave us a review if you get a chance. It helps others find the show. Join the conversation on our Discord server, Which Game First, and our Patreon subscribers get access to exclusive channels. Okay, game explorers, roll those dice, draw those cards, stack those cubes. Happy gaming!